Hello, Patrick here, and welcome to this Bloodstream Mini, a mini brought to you by the Bloodstream Podcast. Minis are a new part of Bloodstream in 2020, and even though they're called minis, I actually think they're a pretty big deal. Let me tell you about them. Bloodstream Minis are episodes of Bloodstream that are just a bit smaller, maybe a single interview or a one or two topic news discussion, things like that. These episodes will be popping up as news breaks and opportunities present themselves, so be sure to subscribe to the Bloodstream Podcast on Apple Pods, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever. Bloodstream Minis aren't on quite the same schedule as the rest of our shows, and they won't all be promoted on social media, so if you are interested in the latest and greatest from the world of bleeding disorders, subscribe to the Bloodstream Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And as for this, our very first Bloodstream Mini, I sat down with Dr. Laura Fox, a doctor in physical therapy working at the University of Colorado Denver Hemophilia and Thrombosis Center. In addition to her clinic practice, Dr. Fox has also been involved in research, including recently having received a grant from the National Hemophilia Foundation for studying women with hemophilia, gender-based differences in the delivery of comprehensive care. I've had the pleasure of knowing Laura personally for a few years. She and Natalie, my wife and flagship episode co-host, have become fast friends. And as I was in Colorado last week to interview someone for an upcoming podcast series that Bloodstream Media is producing on pain, teaser, 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 bloodstreammedia.com for more, I reached out to Dr. Fox to see if she'd spend a few minutes catching up and sharing some thoughts here at the start of 2020. With a tight schedule, Dr. Fox was kind enough to invite me into her family's home when she had only gotten back from work at around 9 p.m. So thank you very much, Dr. Fox, for your generosity. And I hope you all will enjoy this interview with friend and physical therapist, Dr. Laura Fox. I'm sitting here in the house of Laura Fox. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Is Dr. Laura Fox the appropriate title?
Well,
sometimes when it's a PT, I have biases. Hematologists, I go doctor. PTs, I sometimes don't go doctor, and then I feel insecure.
Right. Well, technically that is correct. I am Dr. Laura Fox. But there's consumer confusion where a lot of people think doctor means physician. And so some PTs introduce themselves as doctor, some don't.
Hmm.
But if I do, I always follow it up with, I'm Dr. Laura Fox, physical therapist.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you were just saying that today is a particularly busy day here in late January. Why is that? What period are we in right now?
Just a lot of stuff going on in my life in general, but at work, I am the solo PT. Usually there's three of us and it's just me right now. One colleague recently moved to Montana and the other is off at musculoskeletal ultrasound training. So holding down the fort by
all right.
myself. That's okay. I've got a good team that helps me out. So
how long have you been there?
Almost 10 years now.
So you've seen a couple of turns in the PT department there then, right? Like you were there with Dr. Sharon Funk. Mm-hmm. And have there been a couple of other PTs who have come and gone in your tenure?
Actually, no. So Sharon, I mean, Dr. Sharon Funk,
yeah.
You know, legend in hemophilia PT, bleeding disorders PT, was there for a very long time and then fairly recently retired. While she was still there, the colleague that moved to Montana came in and then Mary, who is there with me now. And that's it. That's been our PT department.
And will that person be backfilled? I'm imagining sooner than not, hopefully. Yeah, fingers crossed.
She'll be back in a few days and she'll be equipped to do ultrasounds. So that'll actually help me out.
Which are all the rage right now. Yeah. Our community. Actually talk a little bit about that because I never heard of ultrasounds outside of like some very narrow contexts up until a few years ago. And now I feel like I'm hearing about it all the time in conjunction with joint health. So why?
Well, I mean, I think it's new and exciting and people want to always explore new ways to diagnose, new ways to pinpoint our treatment to be more effective. So ultrasound is something we can do in real time to look at what's going on inside the joint or the muscle to help us determine if there's bleeding or not, or maybe it's not bleeding, maybe it's inflammation.
Microbleeds in particular, right? And some of those like quote subclinical bleeds I have heard may be, I don't know if easier is the appropriate word, but more diagnosable with ultrasound technology. Is that accurate or has that been your experience in the technology?
Well, I should give a disclaimer that I am not the expert. I've been doing it, I guess about a year now, but personally I found it most useful when the bleeding is there's a pocket of blood that's a little bit more obvious. As far as microbleeding, I think that's a little bit harder to tell. Soft tissue proliferation, so kind of that thickening of the tissue can look very similar to really mild bleeding. And so sometimes just with the ultrasound, it can be a little more difficult. Now, there might be some people who have been doing it for years that maybe have honed their skills to that point. Right now, I use it as part of my toolbox. And sometimes it really can swing things one way or another. A lot of times it's part of the overall exam. So in addition to clinical exam, we'd look at the ultrasound images and use that to help determine what's going on and what kind of treatment we need.
Did you always know that you wanted to specialize in bleeding disorders?
Not at all.
How did that happen?
So I did not even learn a thing about bleeding disorders in physical therapy school. It wasn't part of our education. I worked for a year in general practice and wanted to specialize in pediatrics. So I traveled to Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Oregon to do a pediatric residency.
Okay.
As part of the residency, I worked in the Hemophilia Treatment Center, and that's how I entered into the world of bleeding disorders.
Gotcha. Okay.
My mentor, Dave Olson, you've met Dave before.
No, I know the name, but I know of Dave.
Dave's another legend, kind of like Sharon. Really excellent mentor. He made a comment one time, and I'm going to get it wrong, but something to the effect of, like, you know, you don't choose to work in bleeding disorders, it chooses you. And I remember hearing him say that in a documentary and having like a lightning moment where I was like, oh my God, I think it chose me.
Was there a moment it chose you? Is there like a story or a patient or an interaction where it was just like the before after moment?
No, it was almost, that lightning moment was almost shocking because I realized I was already in and I just didn't know it. Like I had just, it's just such an amazing community to work with, and really loved what I was doing, and it's so unique, and I felt like I had benefited from the great mentorship of Dave and Nancy Durbin's another PT there, and had this knowledge and skills from working with them that I was so fortunate to have, and I just realized that I wanted to do something with that and keep working in that population.
It's intriguing that you're at the HTC here in Denver of all places, and that you got your doctorate just not too far from where we are right now, right? At Regis here in Denver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And Denver being such a mecca for hemophilia in its history. I mean, so many of the titans either have been a part of the Denver HTC or came through or trained someone. Like Denver, I was actually just telling producer Greg over here, I came to Denver the first time 20 years ago to get a isotopic synovectomy done on my left ankle and right elbow, because at that time, nuclear isotopic synovectomies in 1998 were only happening in a select couple of places, including progressive old Denver's HTC. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that it was Oregon, of all places, that pulled you into the hemophilia world. Did you know then, though, that you would likely want to bring that back here to Denver?
Well, I didn't have a plan for what that would look like, but my residency was a year long. So I came back to Denver after that year, and I still had an active Colorado license, and Sharon needed some help with an outreach clinic. And being a small world, Sharon knows Dave. She was asking around for anyone who could help, and Dave said, hey, our resident Laura just moved back. She might still have a Colorado license. So 2 weeks after I moved, I got a phone call, and I went off to Grand Junction, Colorado with Sharon and the team for an outreach clinic. So just like dove right in.
Did you grow up in a very science house, a physical house? Was this kind of part of, what was the house like growing up?
My house growing up?
Yeah.
In West Virginia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it? What I'm asking, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, was science always a part? Was this destined for you to wind up being where you are now?
I mean, I think it's not surprising that I ended up here. My mom is a nurse. My dad is a clinical psychologist. I was a psychology major in undergrad and then became a physical therapist. So I think, service profession, caring professions is really part of my family culture. Mm. And so, I don't think it's surprising that I ended up where I did. They were always great role models of that in their professional lives, but also in the way they interacted with people in general, and just put a lot of value on caring for others. And so that's probably part of why I ended up doing that with my career.
Going back to the PT world, when I think about physical therapy, my brain as a person with hemophilia, of course, goes to rehab and goes to stretching and try and doing things that I don't want to do, but I know I have to do, either because there's an injury or I've just lost a certain amount of mobility. It's all like don't want to, but have to. Do you find that to be the case? Is that energy true in the room often, that there's a, like, I know I gotta be here, but I really don't want to?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely circumstances that's true. I think as the pharmacological management of bleeding disorders has changed, there are some kind of unique treatment situations with physical therapy. But what you're talking about makes me think of acute bleeds, when really to heal safely and minimize, you know, chronic damage to the joint, you really have to like stay off of it and rest it. And that's when I have to deliver really sucky news of like, you gotta stop. Like, you can't go to basketball practice. Like, you have to take care of this and heal. And
how's that go?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard news to receive. And, you know, especially when you're talking to a young person in particular, I think it's really hard. I think the times where, you know, it didn't make it easier to hear, but maybe they appreciated how it was delivered, is when I just acknowledged that, like, yes, like, this news, this stinks. Like, what I'm asking you to do is hard, and I'm really sorry, and it sucks, and that's true. And but I wouldn't ask you to do this if it wasn't really important to help you heal. So I think if we don't acknowledge how hard that is, we can really be kind of missing the person in the room, and just kind of thinking about the bleed.
You mentioned earlier there are unique circumstances in hemophilia. What comes to mind when you describe unique circumstances in hemophilia with regard to physical therapy?
Well, I mean, just in the decade that I've been doing this work, there have been dramatic changes in the population, frankly, like how our patients are presenting. Obviously I wasn't doing this 50 years ago, but you can imagine, and I'm sure the audience is quite knowledgeable about what people's joints tended to look like 50 years ago, yeah, what the activity level was. And so at that time, you know, physical therapists were focusing on, like, can we accommodate these really severe joint contractures where the joint is stiff, it doesn't move all the way, lots of pain, significant limitation. And that has just kept changing as the medications change. And now, you know, as I said earlier, my specialty area was pediatrics, and now I'm like focusing more and more of my continuing education on like sports med, ortho types of interventions, because now like a lot of my patients are like playing like high level sports or out hiking, or, you know, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful change. So, I mean, we've been lucky at our center that people like Dr. Marilyn Manco Johnson have always, you know, really pushed the importance of physical activity and exercise. But I think the patient population has been growing as far as like what percentage of people are participating in that sort of thing. And so now we got to shift. So now it's like, okay, it's not like, can I help you, you know, walk more easily? But now it's like, okay, you twisted your ankle playing basketball, and let's make sure that you heal well and that you're safe to go back to basketball and that you don't re-injure yourself when you're playing. So it's really, it's great for me because I don't like doing the same thing all the time. And so it's kept me on my toes over the last 10 years, trying to always respond to the changes that I see as far as the people that I'm working with and their needs.
What age range of patients are you working with today?
Well, that's one of the cool things about the Colorado Center for me, is that it's the whole age range. So I see, you know, I get to meet families who are bringing in their babies. And of course, as a peds specialist, that's always fun for me to work with little guys.
I can imagine.
And then all the way up.
So that to me is fascinating, because if we think about what all the way up means in 2020 and like the population and like what that population lived through medically and what their management and care and life experience has been like all the way through, babies born in 2020 and the treatment landscape and management landscape that they are being born into. I obviously am quite biased and limited in how much I know about health in general. Are there many other disease states that have, from age 0 to age 70, 80, the
diversity of life experience that hemophilia does. I don't know. We're at a really interesting time. I am curious, like on a given day, are you seeing the 50-something-year-old guy whose knees and ankles and hips are totally destroyed, as well as that basketball player with the turned ankle and the new parent who's mm-hmm. wondering what to do about their pup? Like, are you seeing it all in a given day?
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, as far as like the comprehensive clinic visits, which are generally people's annual, you know, checkup with the full comprehensive team, that is separated into pediatric clinics and adult clinics. However, our center, we see people for acute bleeds or other, you know, rehab or follow-up visits. And so, yeah, I could see kind of all the ages in one day and be shifting gears in that way.
I mean, that's just remarkable to me because of the amount of difference that you're going to see in a given day. I imagine it's interesting. And for someone who doesn't like to do the same thing all the time, I imagine it's all the more interesting. But I also imagine that comes with some unique challenges, not just the ability to shift gear, but I mean, speaking to a 60-something with hemophilia who's been through X, Y, and Z is mm-hmm. far different than a millennial parent of a newborn child. How challenging is that in a given day to negotiate all of those different dynamics, respecting all those different life experiences that your patients have had?
Well, I mean, I kind of want to like latch onto one thing that you mentioned as far as like the 67-year-old who's been through X, Y, and Z, because as far as like meeting that challenge of meeting different people in different stages, I think knowing about the history of bleeding disorders and what might be part of somebody's family history, family culture, community history is really important. And so I think understanding that about my older patients helps me also with, you know, the new families and the younger patients. You know, people are coming from different backgrounds, you know, is it a new diagnosis? It's a new, you know, a new genetic mutation. There's no family history. Or is it someone who watched family members, you know, die of HIV? So I think that I was very fortunate in that Dave Olson, you know, he was working in bleeding disorders during all of that. And so he imparted to all of the people that he trained, like how important it is to understand that history, to know that history and understand it. And so I try to think about what someone is walking into the room with when I meet them for the first time, or even later on when I'm working with them. On the flip side of that, the new parents who don't have any history with bleeding disorders, you know, what did they just Google when what picture right. came up? I do some, I do some education about PT for bleeding disorders, and I show this picture of this knee bleed that's just horrible. I mean, this is like cantaloupe sized, and I always show that picture to these people I'm teaching, and I say, this is what comes up when you Google hemophilia joint bleed. And so you gotta, you know, people may be coming into the room with lots of fears as well. So trying to think about like, you know, where are people coming from? What are they walking in with that I don't necessarily know about? And being sensitive to that kind of helps me navigate the different life stages and the different experiences.
That's a great point. Is there a quintessential story that you tell to people who are considering becoming a physical therapist?
Oh man, I wish I had an awesome answer for that.
I think the answer is no, which, you know, can be awesome at times.
But I mean, so the joke is that, you know, you go to a bleeding disorders conference. If you want to know where the PTs are, you look in the back of the room because we can't sit still. We're the ones that are like up and moving around. So in general,
I didn't know that. I gotta look for that now.
Yeah. I think people go into physical therapy for a lot of different reasons, but some, it's not profound. We just don't want to sit still. We don't want to be at a desk. We want to move. And we like to help people. I mean, I really think physical therapists do like to help people. And, you know, I think physical therapists tend to, of course, not everybody, but in general, tend to listen to their patients. We get the luxury of spending a little more time with them when we're working on exercises or doing different interventions. And so we get to talk to them. We get to listen to them. And that is invaluable. I'm always trying to learn from my patients. And, you know, like I was talking to someone today, like about their shoes. What shoes do you like? What has helped your ankles? You know, they are always giving me ideas about, you know, ways to help other people. So I want to learn from them.
My mom is an RN, and she would always ask podiatrists or any physician that she saw in a pair of shoes that she thought looked good. And she did, what are you wearing? What is that? Where do you get them? And then she would go and get them for me. So I've actually never had to really even think about what sneaker, because my mom's always been ahead of the curve on it. She's the mom that you're like, talk to the mom. That was, talk to the mom, talk to the wife. I'm that guy. Dr. Laura Fox from the UC Denver Hemophilia Treatment Center. Thank you for chatting with me here at your home in the evening after work. She's doing this after hours. This is very impressive, and I'm thankful and grateful. And thanks for sharing a little bit about your life too with listeners.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was a pleasure, and thanks for being here and coming after getting off of a flight and being here late to accommodate my schedule. So I appreciate that as well.
You got it.
Thank you, Dr. Laura Fox, for joining me here on this Bloodstream Mini and for making yourself available with such a limited schedule. If you are not already, be sure to subscribe to Bloodstream. We will have another episode coming out in just a matter of days. It's the audio from the Monday, Feb 3rd, first ever live Bloodstream video podcast recording live streamed on the Bloodstream Media Facebook page. This past Monday, it will be shared here on the podcast this Saturday, Feb 8. And then our next episode of Bloodstream Journeys goes up over on its sister RSS feed on Monday, Feb 10. Oh boy, subscribe to the Bloodstream Journeys podcast as well. Leave ratings, tell friends, email us, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. Tell me something on Twitter @PJ Lynch or Patrick James Lynch on Instagram and Facebook. And I will speak to you all again very soon. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take self-care of yourself.